And welcome back to episode 7 of Box, Box, Box. I'm Sam.
I am Dom.
And this is your favourite Formula One podcast. Let's roll that intro music.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Box, Box, Box. Me and Sam have been keeping track of all the things that have been going on since, well, I suppose since F175.
Yeah, since F175. That was still a weird event, you know.
It was. It was wild. But we've got a lot of things to talk about.
A plethora.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a nice big word, but yeah.
A plethora.
There we go. So what are we going to be talking about this week? We've got some more stuff about Juan Pablo Montoya. Spoke about him before. So yeah, we've got some more stuff about him. How an Irishman with a struggling F1 team got one of the largest male companies on the planet to change its company design and colours. Yeah,
that sounds interesting.
Obviously, we're going to be talking about some stuff from pre-season testing. And why I subconsciously, why I think I subconsciously fell in love with Hondas and Formula One again.
And I think not only that, but we've also got some news on the FIA.
Boo-boo.
Some news on Susie Wolf.
Oh, okay.
Some news on Aston Martin. And not only that, counterfeit Formula One toys.
Do you keep getting adverts on AliExpress for Formula One Hot Wheels as well?
No, mine's worse than that.
Oh, okay. Because I keep like constantly, because obviously I'm on the hunt for the multi-pack of the Hot Wheels, which we spoke about before.
But
it keeps coming up on AliExpress. And I'm like, I'm not buying AliExpress Hot Wheels. But it's not happening.
Straight at the gate, let's talk about the controversial one. Let's get a bit of controversy, get that algorithm going. Have you heard that Susie Wolf...
Mm-hmm.
It's in talks, and
isn't she like the president of F1 Academy?
She is currently the president of F1 Academy, but she's now in talks of becoming the president of the FIA.
Oh,
that's what I've heard and read, and I've read it online. Now, there's a bit of controversy about it because people like, because she's married to Toto Wolff,
yeah,
that they feel that it would make give Patronus,
yeah,
a unfair advantage in terms of like some form of like conflict of interest. But my stance is on this, and I want to know your stance. Susie Wolf has done massive amounts of motorsport.
Yeah, like I don't know like a fat lot about her at all, in all honesty, when it comes to the grand scheme of
her
in motorsport. I know that obviously she's the president of F1 Academy, which is
Basically the founder of Formula One Academy as well.
Yeah, like exactly.
For having a female league.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
But I think...
I can understand where the controversy might come from, but at the same time, why... But I don't know much about F1 Academy either.
My stance is that at this moment in time, the FIA is fucked.
Yeah,
it's very, very, very sanitized.
I mean, like, if she can be the president of
a different league,
yeah, then why could she not be a president? But the thing is, the FIA is motorsport in general. It's
yeah,
not just,
it is. Yeah.
I don't see it being a massive issue, but at the same time, I can understand why someone might think that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because again, Susie Wolf has done nothing but, in my eyes, good for motorsport.
Yeah, definitely.
And for Formula One. And same with Toto. Like, we spoke about our love of Toto and how you can see he's genuinely passionate about motorsport.
Yeah.
So he's a guy who's got a background in tech, who isn't like, let's say, Christian Horner, who's got a pedigree of motorsport.
Yeah, yeah.
He's really passionate about innovation. And I do think if Susie became the president of the FIA, it maybe make Formula One a bit more, well, less sanitized. Like obviously, we spoke about the swearing ban and like obviously all the pathetic little penalties that come in and out.
Well, I don't think Susie Wolf's going to penalize someone for saying the car is fucked.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Toto does love a good bit of an F and a blind.
Oh, he does, doesn't he?
So.
Michael, it's not right. I mean, that's, I thought I'd just throw that one at you and see
your
reaction on that one.
like I said, I feel like I understand how people might think it's controversial, but
yeah.
I also personally don't see there being any controversy with it.
I kind of agree on that one. I'm glad we can agree on that.
Before we do dig any deeper on some other stuff that we've both got notes to talk about, I just want to clarify a few things from previous episodes that we've both talking about where we've gone, oh, we'll come back to that and we'll look at that and just fact checking a few things.
And just before you go,
go on.
I just want in the edit now, and I'm leaving this part in the podcast, go I'm on. Just going to put a clarification graphic in.
Pretty much. So I think...
go for it.
Get ready for the box, box, box clarification station.
Clarification station. Dun, 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 dun.
So I talk about the cheating Benetton team principle quite a lot. And
yes.
I've obviously spoken about him in previous episodes, but I've just not had a chance to address it or not took the time to address it. But obviously that's Flavio Briatore.
Yeah.
And I think on the F175 episode, I talked about his cheating scandal with Renault also. But yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I think Flavio and his like sketchy shit is definitely... that's going to be a...
That's a whole episode.
I think that's a like mid-season break, the summer break filler episode. So we'll do that. Also, I keep talking about him, but I feel like we'll do that mid-season as well, is Kvyat, because I've got so much good to say. Not good about him, but like it's such good things to talk about.
We've got a few long form.
Yeah,
outside of the podcast, like obviously that everything we do that goes out in long form will be completely available in audio as well, because obviously this was originally an audio product.
Yeah.
But I think we've got a few long form things in the works at the minute, but they're probably not going to be out until the end of the year when we're...
Yeah.
Because they're a long project, but we're really excited for them.
I've just realised.
Yeah.
What are you wearing?
Actually, no, I haven't actually asked you. What are you wearing?
I'm wearing a Brazil McLaren shirt, which I copped off the internet the other day that I've been on the hunt for ages. And now I finally got one. Now I'm really happy about it. But what are you wearing?
I'm on a monthly payment, mate. I'm wearing a Snap-on t-shirt.
I was going to say, what's the weekly on it or the monthly?
£6 a week.
£6 a week for...
5 years.
25 years. Yeah. Sounds about right.
I've been working on cars all week. I needed the master's almost there.
I was gonna say your car's nearly done.
Yeah.
Finally, we've only been talking about it since the beginning.
I heard Vinny's running yesterday.
Oh.
It was making some angry turbo noises.
Delightful. That's what we like.
That's what we like. It just smelled like burning because Vinny.
Burning dinosaurs.
Love you, mate.
Anyway.
Carrying on.
Back on track. On a previous episode, we went through, I think it was the Legendary Drivers episode. That's how far back it was.
Good God.
But we went through the World Driver Champions from when the current races on the grid were born. And I said the World Driver Champion when Alonso was born in 1981 was Piquet, but I wasn't sure if it was Nelson or not. It was Nelson Piquet, but I realised after making these notes that there's a Nelson Junior and obviously Nelson Senior, and I can't remember which one it is, but anyway, the Brazilian driver
that will be on the next clarifications.
The Brazilian driver who also won championships in 83 and 87 has three children. I feel like this is worth mentioning here. He's got
Uncle Nelson.
He's got a son, Nelson Junior, a daughter, Kelly Piquet, who we'll talk about in another episode, and another son with the best name that you could think of for a Brazilian child ever, Pedro.
Pedro, 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 Pedro.
So I'm sure we'll talk more. I'm sure we'll talk about Piquet more and his magnificent offspring.
Just been copyright struck on YouTube for me doing that, you know.
More than likely. Couple more things. This is a little bit of a long-winded one for what it is, but Villeneuve in 97 is another one that I wasn't sure if it was Jack or Jill Villeneuve. Imagine being called Jill Villeneuve and naming your son Jack. That's not even in my notes, but after I've said that out loud.
Jack and Jill went up the hill to crash a Formula One car.
That's a little bit insensitive, actually, to say that, because Jill Villeneuve died in a crash. It was quite horrific.
My apologies to the family.
I think it was like the 60s or 70s. It might have been the 80s.
That
was the era when
that wasn't insensitive, because those guys knew they were getting in and might not come back. Though that era of Formula One, those guys had kahunas bigger than this table.
Well, the thing is...
and this table's like an inch and a half thick of frigging timber.
Which, again...
No IKEA furniture here.
Probably getting into... everything about Villeneuve is probably a whole ass episode in itself. But what you were saying about the drivers giving their everything and having the biggest bollocks on the planet is, without diving too deep into it, and this is just from what I remember from watching stuff about it. Obviously, I wasn't born when it happened, but I think he was driving for Ferrari and he was sending it. And I think he was having like a bit of a fight against his teammate, and I think it was qualifying.
Yeah.
And he absolutely like was sending it. And they were like, yeah, you put in a good lap time. Come back in the pits. And he went out and did like another flying lap and just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And obviously
just binned it.
Pushed it too far. And it was a horrific crash as well. But we'll get into that another time. But yeah, so Villeneuve, 70s. He made his debut in Formula One in 77, driving for McLaren. And it didn't take long for him to get noticed by Enzo Ferrari. And the following season in 78, signed to Team Red and stayed there until his tragic death during qualifying in the 1982 Belgian GP. There we go. So that clarified my self-doubt there for a second. Trying to fact-check myself.
So that, John, that needs, you know, all of this needs. And as we've said, I do the long form content. Dom does all the short form. And I've noticed you started putting memes there. You know, the more you know.
Yeah, literally. So
it needs that, innit?
So during Villeneuve's F1 career, he achieved 6 wins, 2 poles, 8 fastest laps and 13 podiums. And the circuit, the Notre Dame in Montreal, because it was Canadian, I believe, was renamed the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve upon his death. So, and his son Jack won the World Drivers' Championship in 1997. So it was Jack Villeneuve. I don't need to fact check myself. I've just done it again. Becoming the first World Drivers' Champion from Canada. Alongside his son, Jack, Gilles Villeneuve is an inductee of the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame. And like I said, we'll definitely do an episode on the two of them soon. It's such like an incredible story. And like with the fact
I'm excited for that. I'll let you plan that episode.
Yeah, because it's one of those where I feel like I only really learned about all of that in like the last 12 months, really. I just kind of discovered it. And I think I was watching some stuff on it was on F1 TV. Cause,
I love it. You know,
you can subscribe to F1 TV in the UK, but you can't watch
the races.
You can't watch live coverage,
but you can watch all the historic and all the documentaries on there and everything.
You can watch all the races, but you can't watch them live. And they've got a lot of technical stuff on there. Obviously we don't go into a lot of the technical stuff with it, but if you are into that, definitely recommend it. And I think it's like $5.99 a month.
Yeah, it's worth it. Honestly, if they had broadcasting rights in the UK, Sky Sports would be done.
Oh yeah, like without a shadow of a doubt. So lastly, the only other thing that I got to talk about is I talked about Kimi Antonelli being the rule-bending rookie, which I wanted to reference where I got my information from for that. I just wanted to kind of
go for it.
Credit people. And it was John Noble from I don't know if they've got a website, but it was from the YouTube channel, The Race. There's loads of interesting facts and videos that they've got. The Race YouTube channel is very informative. And if you do like stats and numbers, just like F1 TV, The Race is a very good source for it. A lot of the facts and fun little snippets that I think I've pulled for any episode that we've done so far has probably had something to come from
The
Race or John Noble. He's pretty good. I don't think John's been working for very long, but very, very good.
So he's knowledgeable.
That's what I've got to, that's what I wanted to clarify before we got into it.
So anyway, we continue. So the one thing I wanted to mention about Aston Martin today,
go on.
As you know, Aston Martin is sponsored by Hugo Boss.
Yes, they are now.
They are now sponsored by Hugo Boss. Have you seen any of the Hugo Boss adverts?
No, I thought it was VCarb that was Hugo Boss, actually.
It's Aston Martin.
Is it both? It could be both.
But... It might both, but...
Go on. Keep going. I'm listening. I'm just going to...
As you know, whenever, like, say, for example, when a driver or a team is sponsored by a clothing brand, say, for example, when it was Hilfiger, it was always Lewis and George. And obviously now, like, with Puma at Ferrari, it's Lewis and Leclerc. Hugo Boss, Aston Martin, you would expect it to be Lance Stroll and Alonso.
Oh, no.
The first wave of advertisement is just Alonso. And it's one of those ones where no matter what you say for Lance Stroll, it's a bit of a dick move.
If if it's just Alonso, that's a bit unfair. But at the same time, but then again, like, let's just bring this right back up. Lance Stroll does have a fantastic head of hair.
He does. But you know who's got a better head of hair?
Oh, yeah, Alonso.
But no, Carlos Sainz.
Carlos.
Hair is fucking majestic.
I was going to say Alonso because he's Spanish, and then you literally bring up Carlos.
Literally, it's all Alonso.
It is all Alonso. That's wild, that is.
I think I've seen one advert now out with Lance Stroll, but it's the first wave and the announcement of everything was all Alonso. And I was like,
but realistically,
even Boss knows the crack.
I think Hugo Boss looked at it, but you've got to think, because I was thinking, why not like Stroll? Because Stroll is not exactly terrible to look at.
No, he's not.
And he scrubs up nice. From F175, like coming in the suit and whatever, he didn't look out. Like some people just don't look right in a suit. And he's not one of them. So,
no, exactly. He looked right.
At the same time, when you think about the type of people that would buy Hugo Boss,
it's probably not.
It's probably not. Yeah. Like, I personally wouldn't buy Hugo Boss. Like, I wouldn't go out of my way to buy it. If I saw something nice and it was Hugo,
I enjoy Boss Polo, you know.
Well, that's the thing. But me and you are technically a little bit of a mature audience now. So,
I mean, that's a brave statement. That is, I might be at the age physically, but mentally, I'm still.
Yeah, but we're not rocking around in like Nike hoodies anymore.
So. Matt, I'm rocking around literally in 97s right now.
I mean, we're both wearing Nike trainers, but
your trainers look like bus seats.
My trainers do look like bus seats. Thanks, for the video people, the bus seats. There you go.
Yeah. For reference, I look like I run trap with my bougie socks.
Roadman trainers.
Tell me these socks don't look like I vote the Tory party.
No, they look like you vote the Monster Raving Loony Party, of all things.
But not only that, talking of merchandising.
Go on.
I was scrolling through Instagram the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And saw an advert for some fake Formula One toys. It was, as we know, we spoke about Lego doing a collaboration with... Formula One this year.
Yeah.
It was all the cars unbranded on Temu.
Yeah, but I think they're unbranded, but you know you're going to buy them and they're going to turn up and they're going to have all the stickers on.
Like, yeah, they're going to have all the stickers on, but you know they're not going to go together like the Lego ones.
No,
Lego's operation is so tight. But I was there and I was like, for fuck's sake.
And again, through my nerdiness, I understand that the tolerances when it comes to Lego construction, it's like...
Oh, Lego's tolerances, it's one of the most precisely engineered things on the planet, isn't it? Like, it's more precisely engineered than space shuttles.
Literally. Well, I was thinking, because obviously we spoke about it before and potentially doing like a B channel or something to do. I was looking at the Formula One Lego sets and I was like, I'll just... buy them and just turn up here one day.
You know we need to do.
And be like, let's build them. And then I looked and then realised how, I think they're about 40, 50 quid each. And then I was like, I'm not doing that 10 times on my own. Like, no, I'm down to put halves and we'll just do it and have a day of building.
Or you know what we should do? We don't build all of them, we just build one each. We'll
just build one at a time and do a video out of it. Because it's the last set that I built that's similar to that.
No, you know what we need to do? You know what we need to do before we do that? Buy the Temu ones.
Oh, yeah, we could. Well, if we buy like two Temu ones and then two of the like legit ones, and then I build a real one, you build a Temu one, and then vice versa, and just see. But then, but what we'll do is we'll get like someone else to come in and not tell us which one's which, so we don't actually know. And be like,
but we will, because the real ones will have Lego stamped on the brick. Then again, Temu probably has
such a Temu ones definitely will, like 100%.
So, but yeah,
but we like got a, we got lost on a Temu tangent there. But hey ho,
shop like a billionaire.
Yeah,
this is. Like
a, oh god, I forgot about that.
This isn't sponsored by Temu, and in no way do we condone the ethical practices of Temu, because I do not like them as a brand. They are a scummy company. But whilst you're writing your notes out, did you see that obviously a lot of cars have gone out with new aero this year during testing, and obviously we can sort of move into testing now. Obviously McLaren went out, and when their car came back, to stop all the press doing close photos of their car, they were literally hurdling around all the press and stopping them from photographing the front of the car.
It's not uncommon.
It's not uncommon, but obviously, like their car, it looked slippy in a good way.
Like gliding through the air, slippy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad you contact. Not like the baby oil man, not slippy.
Maybe that's the trick to F1, is like just diddy in your car. Now that's a short form content video if ever I fucking said something.
Man said, if diddy in your car.
I mean, I'm not wrong really, am I?
Diddler F1. Diddler racing. Oh, no, but it was. I think I saw it go out and I'm like, McLaren, the way they were protecting it, it wasn't like the running joke where they all run around. Well, they were all actively trying to stop people from taking photos.
For pre-season testing, it does make sense. A lot of teams, from stuff that I've seen in the past, like I've never, up until this season, I've never watched pre-season testing in the past. So it's never...
No.
I've caught bits of it, and obviously they cover it in the Drive to Survive seasons.
Speaking of which, that starts any day now.
This Friday. So when this episode drops, Drive to Survive season seven. We did say six in the last, in all the stuff that we did for it before, but it is
season seven.
Season seven.
So it is. I've seen it on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's calling me.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're recording this. We're burning the candle at both ends.
As always.
Not as always.
We need to get better at this. We were really good when we started.
Well, and the thing is, we ran out of like pre-recorded content that we had, and we were just trying to stay on top of being relevant at the time of broadcast.
Yeah.
And like, I think if anything, it's just preparing us for how kind of quick and fast we were going to have to do it during the season start, which is next Sunday.
I know, it's mad, isn't it?
Crazy.
But
absolutely,
I also
crazy.
Have a little bit of fun about, you know, one of my favorite drivers, which is Carlos Sainz.
Yeah.
I love the smooth operator.
Obviously,
I don't know if you saw, he was appointed the director of the Formula One Drivers Association.
I did. I'm just looking at my notes from other bits and bobs that I've taken down over the...
coming weeks.
Yeah.
Or previous weeks even.
And it's... Don't look at that. We'll talk about that in a minute. That's part of my notes, I think. I definitely mentioned it.
Whilst Dom has an existential crisis and works at what's going on, I'm just going to talk some waffle.
Well, my note for Sainz is Carlos Sainz has been voted in by his fellow Formula One drivers as the new Grand Prix Drivers Association director, replacing the now retired Sebastian Vettel.
I think it's one of those.
Which is a headline that I stole from another F1 news company, but I didn't.
I think, though, he was the right man, because, again, everyone.
I think Carlos Sainz, as a person outside of Formula One, but with his involvement in Formula One, is the person that Vettel probably wishes he was, because he was a bit of a arrogant algorithm word, keyword coming in here, bellend. he was very, very arrogant, and a lot of, well, I didn't like him. I actually hated him. And yeah. I obviously, it goes without saying that I'm not Verstappen's biggest fan, but I was not in the slightest Vettel's fan at all.
Yeah.
Like the stick that I do give Verstappen, and he's a good driver and he's a good person, but Vettel.
With Verstappen, he's a bell end on track.
Yeah.
But off track.
All good drivers in the past
have
been horrific to be against, I suppose, is the best way.
But as a person, he's not a bad person.
Yeah.
Like, and the more you see of him outside of Formula One.
But apparently he might be coming back.
Yeah. But as I said, like, so he's the appointed director of the Formula One Driver Association. And again, he's the right man for it.
He's the right man for the job because he can be. I don't know. This is just me prejudging here, but I would say that he can be unbiased and look out for everyone's best interest.
He feels like he's a really empathetic person towards.
Exactly.
But his dad's like it as well.
And he's worked with various people on the grid already anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, like he's moved
around. He's been with Charles. So he was in Red Bull's junior driver program. That's how he come through.
I think so, yeah.
But
the thing is as well, like something that I've seen, and I do kind of agree, I do really think he's the one to watch this year.
Yeah, definitely. After the little bits that I have caught pre-season testing.
I really think this could be a year for Williams. Well, maybe not getting a championship, but being podium contenders.
Top three,
easy. Yeah, really. Because I feel we're seeing the resurgence of Williams.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think, I don't know if we talked about it on an episode prior, because I've mentioned this a lot, but I don't know if I've actually mentioned this with you, because I do try and preserve most of our F1 talk for this so that forget about it. But with Williams being, let's say, as dominant as they have been, or Carlos at least, in pre-season testing, I think that what it comes down to a lot of the time, or in this specific example, would be Williams for the first time, and no other team on the grid has been doing it recently, they've moved away from Excel spreadsheets. That's the one thing this year, that most of their data and stuff and how they crunch numbers and how they develop car parts and do things forward, like they had been for the last however many years it had been, everything was done on spreadsheets. And you know me, I fucking love a spreadsheet.
Is it machine learning there? Rather?
So one of the companies, I can't remember which one it is, but one of the companies that's a sponsor of Williams, they're a tech company. And I think they might have something to do with AI or machine learning or something. But they've sponsored and obviously given a lot of their resources to help Williams progress.
To develop, yeah.
And makes a lot of sense. It does.
And and obviously Carlos as well, he's a fantastic driver. He really is. Get him in a good car,
he'll rag the nuts off anything. He'll get ounce of power out of it. And that's the thing, but you've got to think, even things like developing new brakes or a new spoiler. Imagine working for a team as big as a Formula One team. And Williams isn't exactly one of the biggest teams when it comes to personnel, but
It's still a big operation.
Imagine you're developing a spoiler and then you're just writing your notes in fucking Excel.
All the curve angles.
It's all the data was handled through spreadsheets. And that's for the first time in Williams' history.
You can keep building your data set, and the bigger your data set, and obviously Williams are going to have years of data sets through spreadsheets. Yeah. They can feed that to an algorithm.
You should drop it into ChatGPT and be like, summarize this.
It would be like, optimize this data.
Yeah.
And he'd look at all of it and tell you the best way to its current knowledge.
Well, that's probably what they've done. Whereas every other team prior have slowly pulled away from crunching numbers on a spreadsheet to obviously more
machine learning and algorithmic.
It's more, more modern data handling methods.
That was me doing a word for the algorithm there.
It's something that Williams have just gone bam, and they've got all that data in one go, and they've just took all of it together and gone, although last year's car, for example, might have been terrible, this was actually a really good part. And from the year before, this was a really good part. And the new regulations.
It's basically building the best of what
you have. It's taking everything that they've got and going, boom. And that's the thing, like Williams used to be.
Williams were the first people to ever do like active suspension and
active traction control, stability management.
Yeah, like that. They were, as a back in the day, they were a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's what like Signs is going to be the one to watch for this year. But before we get on to talking about testing or anything you have to speak about, have you seen the rumor that Franco Colapinto is already potentially in the running to replace Jack Doohan?
I haven't seen anything about it, and I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
However,
because of his testing behavior, and it hasn't been great, and Colapinto is a better driver, they're like, Jack might be getting the boot before he even gets into the race season.
As much as I love Colapinto, his little stint that he did at Williams was impressive at parts, but also he didn't. I think Franco didn't show the composure to be a good Formula One driver, like just yet. I feel like he does need to sit on the back burner a bit more. And my prediction would have been for Colapinto, it coming into Formula One would have been probably a swap halfway through this season. For Doohan, for Colapinto, maybe, if at all. If Doohan's going to get in the car and, you know, actually do really well, fantastic. But, and, you know, bad luck for Colapinto in that case. But
because obviously he's their reserve driver at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I feel like, I don't think it's fair. I feel like it's the whole Yuki and Lawson thing all over again, and it's like,
give
him a chance, let him do some stuff,
let him see what he can do.
I love Colapinto to pieces, and his name is just absolutely fantastic to say.
Oh, it's great.
But I don't think it's very fair. But
no, you know, I agree.
It is what it is. If it happens, it happens, and bad luck doing. But again, it could be a case of, let's say that the rumour's true and we get to Australia next weekend and Colapinto's starting. Colapinto could do, say, 3-4 races and perform absolutely poorly. And they go, oh, actually, Jack, come on.
But come back, lad.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon for teams to do that.
No, it's not. Or, say, for example, for put Jack in the first race and he does crap. Yeah. Going to put Colapinto out and he could do incredible, or it could be,
but that's Alpine, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but it's one of those. I feel like Red Bull would do it.
Yeah, but I mean, Red Bull just
go churn out drivers. That's what they're best at. So my sister started watching Drive to Survive because she wants to get into Formula One more, because she knew a little bit about it, but wanted to get in more with it so that she can support us with the podcast and understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, and she wants to come to F1 Arcade to watch a race with us.
Gang,
so
gang.
That's fun. But, which I'm going to talk about again in a bit. But, I think that because I've been watching a lot of Drive to Survive again, it's seeing Red Bull churn through Gasly, Albon, and then finally putting Perez in the seat for however long he was in there for.
It's
just wild watching any team churn through drivers like that. It's like,
it's very much ruthless. But that's how Red Bull was so dominant last year.
That's how Red Bull do it.
So you've got to be.
That's the Red Bull way, and
you've got to be ruthless.
Don't sign for the Red Bull Junior Driver Program if you're not prepared to be scrapped. So I mean, I don't know exactly how it went down, and it was pre-Drive to Survive, so there's not much coverage of it. But obviously, Carlos was Red Bull Junior driver. And I'm sure there's another more experienced driver on the grid currently that was a previous Red Bull Academy, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll do some research and fact check it.
And we'll do that on the next episode.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What notes have I got? So, Juan Pablo Montoya has given us a little bit of an insight on Antonelli while we're speaking about rookies.
Okay.
So I've pulled this from an article which I haven't credited once again. This has been in my notes for a while, to be fair. So this is probably a little bit of old news, but I didn't. I only saw it pop up once. Normally, when something's like breaking news,
yeah, you see it everywhere.
You constantly see. But yeah, this I only saw once. So how true it is or whatnot, I don't know. But yeah,
citation needed.
Yeah, former F1 driver Juan Pablo Montoya has shared rumours of Antonelli crashing frequently during the tests, suggesting that he might be overdriving. Montoya's insights come from his connections with the racing world, including his son's involvement in Formula 3, which I was not aware of.
Neither was I. I need to watch some more of the...
I was going to say, we still don't really know that much about him, but I feel like what we should do is like a research episode where we know, obviously our knowledge on him is very limited.
And just see what we can dig
and
up.
Just dig it, like do no prior research and just start pulling stuff together and then just start spitting out random bits of information. And
that episode's going to be, I feel that's going to be a bonus episode.
Yeah,
that Iron Man episode, that's some bonus content that is.
But yeah, that's, you know, watch us research Pablo Montoya.
2-hour live stream.
But yeah, he's...
We'll do it on TikTok.
Funnily enough, his connections with the racing world, including his son's involvement in Formula 3 and connection to the Red Bull Junior Driver Program. We always talk about it. Montoya suggests that Antonelli's success in 2024 will depend on his mindset. If he aims to learn from his teammate, George Russell, and shows improvement throughout the season, it will be considered a good year. However, if he tries to immediately dominate Russell, he might struggle. Which, yeah, I feel like Russell, like when he had that chance to obviously fill in for Hamilton and whatever race that was, whatever year, when he was still at Williams, he showed masses of potential. And
I mean, George Russell's an incredible driver anyway.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm getting to. He saw that. Well, we saw that happen. And then I genuinely think that Mercedes cheated him out of winning that race because they messed up his pit stop. And I reckon they could have done that on purpose purely because imagine having someone like Lewis, and granted it was when Mercedes were dominating anyway.
Yeah.
But imagine having someone like Lewis come in and dominate, but the way that George was going, if he would have not had to have done his second pit stop, he would have finished miles ahead of everyone. I think he held the race lead for a majority of the race as well. But watching someone come from a back of the grid team, jumping in the Mercedes, which is obviously the dominant car anyway, but and being too big for the car, having to wear shoes that are smaller than his size so that he can fit without modifying Lewis's car, and then coming in and being able to win that well, like, I feel like that would have, A, made Lewis look bad, B, obviously made George look incredible. But the third point would be, it makes Mercedes look too, the wind's being too satire, I guess. Like, it's too...
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at us. Our car is literally that good. Anyone, me and you could get
anyone
in
can
it
get in
and
drive
win.
It, not realizing that it is that incredible of a driver.
Yeah, so
which speaking of which, you did mention, I'm not sure if we spoke about this on another episode, but about the FIA changing the rules from Monaco.
Yes, I've got a point about that. So, while we're on the last bit of Mercedes and the Antonelli bit, though, I've got here it says, despite the rumours, Mercedes engineers have been impressed with Antonelli's testing performance. The team's decision to promote him, especially considering other experienced drivers like Carlos Sainz were available, indicates their confidence in his potential. Ultimately, Antonelli's performance in the 2025 season will be the true test of his readiness for Formula One, just like we were talking about with Colapinto.
Yeah.
You know, at least Colapinto's got some first-hand experience in Formula One.
Yeah.
Doing races and strategies and things like that.
I think none of that. It's also, it's one of them ones where like, there's a lot of new drives on the grid this year. That's what's going to make this season really interesting as well.
Well, I didn't realise as well, after watching a bit of, I think it was F1 TV content, while I was like proof listening and to some of our previous episodes, that Gabriel Bortoleto, the rookie for Stake or Kick Sauber Stake,
whatever they're called,
the green ones,
Audi,
yeah, pre Audi. They're he's the F2 champion, and watching him and Isaac Ajar in Formula 2 go up against each other for the title, I didn't realise, obviously, how good of a driver both of those are.
Yeah.
So I think Hajar came second in the Drivers' Champions for F2, and obviously Bortoletto won. But Bortoletto was F2 champion, and he signed with Stake, arguably the worst team on the grid. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
The thing is, though, it's one of those ones for him. It's a career step.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Stake at the minute are a stepping team. They're a team that where...
Well, look at Senna. When Senna signed his first Formula One, it was for... was it Tyrrell, I think it was?
It wasn't a great team.
It was the worst team on the grid. And then his second season, I think he signed for Lotus, the black and gold JPS. Yeah. But,
That livery was great, you know.
Yeah, it was. But another driver that did that, funnily enough, I think it was, I mentioned it earlier, Villeneuve. He made his debut. Driving for, again, for McLaren in 77. Not like they're a bad team, but then literally the following year, Enzo Ferrari signs him at Ferrari, which...
That's the thing. Sometimes it's just getting noticed of potential.
I think like big teams, like front of the grid teams, Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren at the moment, are the teams that they need to see you perform in something. I don't want to say subpar, but that's kind of the
for
only
me,
way.
Them taking a step of taking on, even though they could be incredible, and we're both dying today.
Yeah.
Even though taking a step and taking on a Formula 2 driver, Formula 1 is that, it's a massive step.
Yeah, exactly. I think the only
for
team
the big constructors,
yeah,
like it's a massive financial and brand risk.
Yeah.
For example, if McLaren took on a Formula 2 champion, they could be incredible. But for them to do that, it's a massive risk.
Well, I mean, look at Mercedes. Granted, they're not in anywhere near as much form as they had been in the past. Like, I think, were they fourth in the last constructors, maybe? I don't know. They didn't do very well at all. Mercedes has been pretty poor, all things considered. But a team as prestigious as Mercedes with the win record and stuff that they've got.
Taking on Hamilton?
Well, I don't know. Hamilton, he'd already won one. But Antonelli? Like, yeah, because he's not won. He's not one
F2. Oh no, sorry, I'm on at McLaren back in the day when they took on Lewis from the Young Drivers program.
Well, he'd been in McLaren's Young Driver program for a while and they've been watching him. So
yeah,
but it's still like you say.
But these days. But the thing is, again, for Kick Saber, that they haven't got to spend as much money for it because they're a budget team.
Yeah, but arguably, Bortoletto would probably be. I don't know if this is true or not, but I'd take an educated guess that Bortoletto would probably be the most expensive F2 driver available because he's the winner.
He's probably still cheaper than the cheapest Formula One driver.
Probably. And also, he Brazilian. We got a fucking Brazilian back on the grid.
Live for it, mate.
That's...
We mentioned about Monaco and the rule changes potentially for Monaco this year.
Yeah, so...
I think we had a little conversation outside of the pod on this.
I can't remember, if I'm honest, but is your thing about Monaco, about the...
extra pits. And,
yeah, the extra pit stop.
To make it... So it's not just like...
Extra mandatory pit stop at Monaco.
Because I know...
It has been confirmed, according to ESPN.
That's solid then, because ESPN are a trusted source now for Formula One news. But
ESPN hold the rights for the broadcast in America.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I know they do have F1 TV, but unlike over here, you can choose where you want to watch it because freedom.
America. Let's not get into America at the moment. Let's just dodge over that.
From the ESPN article that I've got here, I'll just read the first line of it, which is, in an attempt to make the Monaco Grand Prix more exciting, the FIA has approved plans to enforce two mandatory pit stops at the event this year. So that it's literally this year. That's fantastic news. To be fair, it's a short article. I'm not going to read it all, but the idea was first raised during a Formula One commission meeting earlier this month, and it was signed off by the FIA's World Motorsport Council on Wednesday. When was this article? February 26th, so it's still not that far back. But Verstappen said, it's just one of those tracks where it's very hard to pass. And of course, the bigger we make the cars, the more difficult it is to race.
Yeah, make the cars fucking smaller then.
He also said, I felt like in 2016, there was a little bit more of an opportunity. Now that's, of course, gone. If two pit stops help, I don't know. But I guess we'll find out, right? Yeah,
I think that's the thing.
Again, Verstappen, as much as like I throw shade about him and give him shit and like...
He does want the race.
Yeah, like I've got to admire his... what's the word? His passion for the sport, and to make it more interesting, make it more fun for the drivers, for us as the consumers to watch.
Yeah.
It's good for everyone. Like, so I do like you a little bit, Verstappen, I promise. But just I'm still going to throw shade once in a while.
Just a little bit.
So,
but yeah, I mean, for us though, like again, the biggest problem in Monaco, back in the day, Monaco was always the best race. When Formula cars were smaller,
yeah,
when they were smaller, and they could really overtake on the tight corners.
It was still tight though.
It was still tight,
but that's what made it interesting.
But that's the thing, like they were really taking massive risks doing overtakes. As opposed to now, the cars literally can't overtake because the space isn't there.
Yeah,
the only real opportunities to overtake is a tunnel.
Yeah,
which. Incredible. That's an incredible thing. But
I think after turn one and going into turn two at Monaco, that's a little bit of a good spot.
Yeah.
But for overtaking, just from, I want to say this sounds lame or very wrong, but from first-hand experience of playing the games, but obviously that's a lot different. But while we're on the topic of Monaco as well, I don't know why I made a note of this. But I did. But in Monaco 2022, Perez had a crash, and I think it was with Sainz in qualifying. I think it was a controversial thing where it was Perez versus Verstappen, and there was a bit of beef going on and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the reason behind it was Perez crashed so that Verstappen couldn't put in a quicker time during qualifying. And me and my dad were talking about it, and he said, Perez is that bad. He was thinking about changing his name to Sergio Stroll.
Moving swiftly on from that, it was testing. It has been testing. Now, obviously, I watched the first couple of days of testing. The thing that it was a bit sad again. I'm sorry to throw shade at Aston Martin, but Aston Martin did the least laps during the first day of testing.
Did they?
Yep. Obviously, Lando had the fastest time. I don't know if you saw. There was a power cut. Literally, there was all these like.
The garages?
Yeah. No, the whole track garages, no power, darkness. They were all there with phones there and everything. Like
lighting it up.
Like just so they can work. Like people like phones on the sides. And I'm like, I live for that. Let's carry on.
That's, I mean, insert me moment here, but improvise, adapt, overcome.
Book me a 5-star hotel.
Or what is it? Modern problems require modern solutions.
Modern problems require modern solutions. I laughed at that Chappelle meme, you know.
Yeah.
I loved it. But yeah, and then day two, obviously, it was raining.
Oh,
did you? And Carlos Sainz channeled his inner Tokyo drift.
Oh, was he sliding around?
Yeah, but he slid around full like smoke on and just caught it.
Would have got like
I was there. I was like, my guy. There was a first crash of... Well, first proper crash.
Oh, go on.
It was only a little It was only a little kiss. It was only a little...
A love tap.
A little love tap, yeah.
We love it.
Between Hülkenberg and Piastri. They smashed into each other's wheels. And I think... It was a wheel bang, and I think there was a little bit of front-end damage to the front splitter.
Hmm.
But imagine that. Like, you're like, right, let's get the car out. Everybody, put your foot
down. Was that when it was wet?
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Like, Leclerc, like, fully span out.
Oh,
but yeah,
Leclerc's never. From what I might be wrong, but just from the few things that I've seen of him driving in the wet, I feel like Leclerc is not very good in the wet. Like some drivers are, some drivers aren't. Verstappen good in the wet.
Hamilton is the goat. In the
Hamilton
wet.
Loves the wet, but Button loved the wet. Senna loved the wet.
But
so
the thing
but
is,
Leclerc is not
from
one of
what
those.
All the testing I could see, it seems like there was a lot of like. Full-on lockups, like cars locking up.
Yeah, but that's the best time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But talking to the wet, and ironically, I remember Jeremy Clarkson saying it's Silverstone this year because it was wet.
Hmm.
And he said it's wet, Hamilton's going to win it. He said because he went, dry tracks is for the new boys.
Yeah.
He went, the old boys...
Smash it in the wet.
Only reason that is because of experience.
Yeah, well...
It's
that's
pure
it.
Experience.
And just, I suppose it comes into... Like Senna used to be good in the wet because he used to practice back in his karting days in the wet.
Yeah.
And Verstappen in the wet. I don't know about Hamilton, but it's probably a similar scenario. But with Verstappen in the wet, what his dad used to do, in his full "I want to get my son into Formula One and bully him into it"
days,
is he used to put him out in the wet at karting on slicks. And it's like,
oh, just, well, that's what Senna did. Senna would go out on slicks.
Yeah, just in the wet and draw.
Because he knew how good he was.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, you know, with Senna, and I always say this, like, these ground effect cars, they're incredible. The downforce they have and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But back in the day, Senna will go out. He'd go out on, like, say, intermediates or wets. Well, it'd be wet tyres.
Yeah, and it'd be like, shite. Let's put some, let's
like,
put
well, he'd be there. He'd be there. And the minute it stopped raining, he'd be in slicks. And he'd just do the whole track on slicks. And I'm like, whilst doing that with a H-pack gearbox, and a clutch and everything, it was a different league, you know. But we have a couple of wet races this year.
Oh yeah, I don't want Brazil to be a wet race again.
No,
I'm not going to lie. Its somewhat of a tropical climate as well, it's not unlikely to happen again. But
I will say, I really hope Cota is as American as it was last year. You know. Do you not remember that all the military there, that the Blue Angels? It was one step away from the Team America theme coming in. America.
I think the other thing I wanted to talk about is, as I mentioned, the brave and bold Irishman.
Go for it.
So, I'm not going to talk about exactly what the topic was, but I was talking to Sam about changing something quite important about the podcast in the future. Do you remember what I was on about?
No.
Okay. I'll tell you afterwards, but I was talking about changing something. And you're like, you can't do that. Like this is how it is now. And it's like branding, and you don't change your brand because it's important to your brand image and that.
But, okay.
I pulled this off I got the information from this, from the source itself.
I think I actually remember what you're talking about now.
Yeah, from the Formula for Success podcast with David Coulthard and Eddie Jordan. And to summarize, a very interesting story. And
TLDR.
I highly recommend going and checking it out to hear it from his own mouth. But Eddie Jordan managed to get DHL to change their company colours from white and red to red and yellow. Because DHL were one of the lead sponsors for the Jordan F1 team at some point in the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
The only problem that he had with that when he signed the deal, because Eddie Jordan was like, he'd do anything to get money for the team because they weren't the most...
They weren't massive.
They weren't like the most financially wealthy or financially well-off team.
Yeah.
He'd kind of sign things and be like, yeah, I'll think about that later. Like, we'd give him the money. And he'd sign this deal with DHL and probably, I can't remember if he would have read the small print or not, but it basically came down to Benson and Hedges were also one of the lead sponsors of the car at the time as well.
Yeah.
And that being in Benson's contract was the cars had to be yellow. But in the DHL contract, the cars had to be white or red. And there was already white and red cars on the grid all over the gaff. And they wanted... it was a conflict of interest for both teams, and he wanted to please both of them. So he organised... I don't know whether he just gate crashed or officially organised, knowing Eddie Jordan, probably just gate crashed, a meeting with the board of directors for DHL. And you've got to
imagine that your DHL, a German company who is very, I imagine, stereotypically German, their board of directors.
Yeah, well, they're
in terms of mannerisms,
punctual,
polite,
by the book. You know,
and Eddie Jordan just comes in, bang, door open.
Literally. Well, imagine this scenario. Let's say that it is how we're thinking it is. He barges into this meeting with the boards of directors and high up people in the company, and he obviously wants to talk to them all about this problem that he has, but he's not letting them know it's a problem. So he's not letting into the fact that, oh, I'm doing this because Benson and Hedges, who give us lots of money, and you know, you're going to give us lots of money. But he sits down with them and he hands everyone a piece of paper with pictures of vans on, all white vans with, I'm assuming the logos, if they even had logos on, covered up. And he goes, what company is this, like, for the vans? I don't know. All the white vans, they all look the same.
Yeah.
And then he does it with the infamous...
UPS.
UPS, or... Yeah, UPS with a brown.
Yeah, UPS brown.
And he's like, what company is this? And I'm like, ah, UPS. And then he does it with aeroplanes, but with the FedEx blue and red.
Yeah.
It's like, who's this? But obviously not with the branding on. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. But, and then he goes, which, with the white ones as well, I think I might have skipped over it, but we'll come back to it. With the vans, he goes, which one's your van? And they're like, oh, we don't actually know. Like white and red. It's like, it's fairly, I think even the United States Postal Service is white and red.
Yeah.
But he's like, we don't know what it is. So, and then he threw down paper with white vans and then one yellow van. And went, whose is that? Or something along those lines. And basically the TLDR of it convinced them to change their color to yellow and red, so that they'd stand out more. And I mean, like, when you look at DHL now...
Oh, yeah, DHL is yellow and red.
It's synonymously yellow. Like,
I don't remember a time when DHL wasn't yellow.
There you go. So, and Eddie Jordan went in and was like, yeah, because anyone who knows anything about marketing and branding as a whole will tell you, don't change your company colours, don't change your logo or things like that. A lot of people do refresh the logo.
Well, obviously, there's a big one at the minute in marketing, which is nothing to do with that, but it's Pretty Little Things rebrand.
I didn't even know it happened.
Yeah, it looks awful. It's gone from this to, like, they've tried to look more like a premium brand and triple their price.
They're not a premium brand.
But, like, yeah.
Know your place. Yeah. Sort
but,
of thing.
But no, that's exactly it. Like, sometimes it works really badly, but in other times it works incredibly.
You don't know until you make the gamble, do you? But that's, again, it's the fact that he stated the car's leading brand colour must be yellow, which clashed with DHL's demand to be red and white. And I think he kind of pointed out as well, obviously, if you go and watch the Formula for Success episode or listen to it, for example, it's better when it comes out of his mouth. But
yeah,
I'm not the first person to redistribute that story, because
I didn't know that's a great story.
I heard that on the Formula for Success podcast, because basically so when we put the episodes out on the Friday, I usually listen to them again on my drive home from work on a Sunday, and my drive home from work on a Sunday is usually longer than what this podcast always is. So our podcast will finish and then Formula for Success will always start playing afterwards.
Yeah.
And I listen to it, and yeah, it's just, I feel like that's a really good story. But while we're on the topic of Eddie Jordan and Jordan and the lovely yellow cars, why I think I do subconsciously love Hondas.
Go for it.
So here's an interesting fact that I bet you wasn't aware of, which my dad informed me of. And I knew this before, but I was told ages ago and probably forgot about it. My dad wanted to name me Damon after Damon Hill.
Did not know that, but it feels weird you being called Damon Cook.
Well, that was on the cards, but evidently didn't happen. But that would have been a thing. And obviously Damon drove for Jordan for a short while. But I think it was the 1998 car, the 3-litre NA V10 Mugen Honda engine that revved up to 13,800 RPM, a total of 690 brake horsepower.
Can we bring back those cars that screamed like that?
I mean, V10 Mugen Honda engine. Like,
just doing things for you, that isn't
again,
it?
Again, it's only a short little bit there to include, but yeah, I think I didn't really know much about Jordan and Honda and all that, and again being potentially named Damon, but I again fell in love with being a Honda fanboy, and I still love that Jordan car. Like, what's it, the 198? The Jordan 198, my favourite. I've just bought as well a really nice print that some artist did. It's like one of 200 or something, but left that car, and I've got like a cardboard cutout that my nan had for years. Got it. Oh, it's just stunning car.
But you know, on that note, I think that's about everything for this week's episode. So
I think there is only one last thing that I did want to mention, which is I came across it. I've been dying to mention this in an episode for a while now, and I've not had a chance. A guy who's a fan of the podcast, and has been since the beginning, and has given us a lot of feedback and a bit of outside
yourself.
It's just a view from a different perspective. A friend of mine that I've met at a gig and keep seeing him at gigs randomly, not planning it. Nat, shout out to your big bad self. He informed me that Crofty is a metalhead. So he told me, and I was like, oh, I'll have to do some research. Did not do any research whatsoever because I'm lazy. But
I'm wicked. That joke's just gone straight over your head.
I didn't actually hear what you said.
I said I'm wicked.
Oh.
You said you're lazy.
Yeah.
Wicked and I'm...
yeah. I just heard wicked and I was like, jungle is massive. But yeah. So Crofty, metalhead, and he's... Where? Oh, there we go. Crofty's a metalhead. I saw him post a picture of himself at a Periphery gig with Misha Mansour. So that's what reminded me to talk about it recently. But on the topic of drivers and music, Sebastian Vettel is an old school pop punk kid. Like, he really likes The Offspring. And Mike M. I know it's a bit more emo.
Green Day.
Yeah, that's his thing. So, which brings me to the point of the 2008 ITV farewell video. I think I might have said
it before. I saw it.
Yeah. Of them all singing, everyone on the grid and the mechanics and commentators and everyone doing My Chemical Romance's Welcome to the Black Parade.
Yeah.
Which was pretty badass. And the last point of music, very short. Did you know, I did not, someone, I think it was Bella James, she was one of her videos, she was doing some stuff on Lando Norris, and she was making him a Tinder profile for like the bands and seeing like the outcome of it.
Okay.
But she found a picture and it reminded me of something that I saw about it. Lando Norris is a DJ.
I know.
I didn't know that.
I actually knew that.
I didn't know that.
That's why, like, it was like, what would somebody be if they weren't a Formula One driver and like Lando DJ?
Because
my personal favorite one was when asked what would Valtteri Bottas be, and they're like porn star.
A porn star. It's only because of the mustache.
It's because of the mustache
and that ass, Bottas.
Bottas. But yeah, on that note, let's wrap things up.
I do think that is pretty much everything.
Because we've already taken up an hour of your day.
Has it been that long?
It's been an hour. Been over an hour now.
Bloody hell. To be fair, it's been a good... We've spoken about a lot of interesting topics. Definitely.
Definitely. But you know what? Where can you find us?
You can find us.
You just firmed yourself up then.
I'm the hype. I know we're running out of time, but this is very important. It's the last chance to say it. The season starts soon. Obviously, we got through pre-season testing. I'm going to get through this as quickly as I possibly can and not fuck it up. We're going to obviously kick off the season with a double header with the Australian Grand Prix next weekend. Sunday, the 16th of March, is the race, 4 a.m. UK time.
Yeah.
And it is 3 p.m. down under. Then, straight after that, we're going to Shanghai International Circuit for the Heineken Chinese Grand Prix on the 23rd of March. That is 7 a.m. UK time, 3 p.m. China. Just to throw a spanner in the works, though, China will be hosting the first sprint race of the season. And then we're going to Suzuka.
You're talking like this at your microphone.
Oh, sorry.
I tried to tell him discreetly.
Yeah, I was just like, what? What's going on? Yeah, we go to Suzuka after that for the Lenovo Japanese Grand Prix on Sunday, the 6th of April, which is 6 a.m. UK time and 2 p.m. JDM time. And then finally, The one that most people will be watching live, I think, especially in the UK, is the Gulf Air Bahrain Grand Prix, which will be on the 13th of April at 4 p.m. UK time and 6 p.m. local. So, yeah, I just felt like, you know, that's coming up.
I officially think that is it.
That is absolutely everything.
So I'm going to ask you one more time. Dominic, where can you find us?
You can find us on all social media platforms with the handle BoxBoxBoxPod.
Where can I find you personally?
My personal Instagram, I think, is the best place to find me because I don't use anything else, really, actively, is at DJ Dom Cook.
Sam, you can find me, yours? And it's actually on my laptop for once, at Sentio Silvano on everything.
So, yeah, I think... We're finally there. We're finally there. We're finally we got there. To the end.
Finally there. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I've been Sam.
I've been Dom. We'll be back same time next week. And we'll be doing predictions for the race.
Yeah.
It'll be our first ever
predictions race. Prediction podcast.
The season. It's here. It's coming. We're so
can
excited.
We get fucking better chairs next time?
Yes, we're going to have better chairs. This has been, I actually have really enjoyed doing this episode. I think same. It's probably one of my favourites so far. And I felt like we really didn't have a lot prepared for it, but it's
but more importantly, this has been Box Box Box. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week for the season predictions. See you later.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye.